Now, the coronavirus pandemic has increased demand for homes in suburban areas. As more folks work from home, they need space for offices, desks, and families. With housing prices rising faster than wages, many are renting those homes. Our next guest says the demand for rental houses existed before the pandemic, and there's been a big investment in the construction of single-family homes, not to own, but to rent. Ryan Diesemer is a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He's been covering the boom and the rental housing market. Ryan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you write, Ryan, this trend, houses being built with the intention of being rented, it goes back before the pandemic. Where is this market coming from?
Well, it all started, you know, in the foreclosure crisis of the last decade, when all those foreclosed homes hit the market. Investors bought a lot of them, and some really big investors, big Wall Street financiers, bought them, fixed them up, turned them into, you know, rental homes, and built these big single family rental companies, something that didn't exist before. Renting homes was always sort of a local mom and pop business. Those businesses became so lucrative that they decided, well, you know, we don't have to just buy them at, you know, 40 cents on the dollar in a foreclosure auction. We can buy houses off the market. Now, of course, we know that home prices since then have risen. Competition for those houses is fierce. And so some of these investors have said, well, you know what? Why don't we just build the houses to rent straight away? You know, doing that allows them to basically design a home that's intended to be rented that, right from the start, so they can think about finishes and making homes durable for multiple tenants. What these landlords have also found is that people are willing to pay a premium to be the first people to move into a house. It's not that different than, you know, if you went out and were looking to buy a house, you might pay a little more to be the first person to own a home.
This is a big switch, though, right? I mean, because I think you think rental, you think multi-unit, apartment building, right, or even a duplex or townhouses or something like that. This whole concept of renting a single family house versus buying it has not really been the norm, has it?
Yeah, well, so, you know, renting homes is an ancient business, frankly. But what sort of is new is sort of who's renting. Now, you know, the financial crisis also, some other things happened, right? You had a tremendous, you had people unable to tap into their home equity because home prices fell. So that contributed to the huge rise in student debt that we have. You know, we went from like, say under $500 billion of student debt before the housing crash. Now we've got like $1.7 trillion in rising. Right. So all these young people that are graduating college, they've got pretty good jobs. They earn a lot, but they have a lot of debt, usually student debt. And that's keeping them from buying homes, but it's not keeping them from doing things like getting married and having children and doing these things that sort of compel people to move into the suburban home. So they're this ideal market. They can pay a lot of rent. And they want to live there, but they might not have the means to buy a house, usually the down payment. And of course, a lot of people sort of psychologically are scarred from the crash. They might have gone through it and lost a home or been stuck in an underwater house for years. They may have seen their parents or friends go through foreclosure. So, you know, buying a home for a lot of people lost its luster. And there's also a fraction of people that, you know, they see home prices rising and they say, well, they're going to stop rising at some point, or they're going to fall. So maybe you have people waiting. You also have a lot of people, you know, there's not a lot of Americans that get that job right out of college, move to a town and stay there their whole career. People move around a lot now for work. So you have this huge number of people, sort of the millennial generation, that are what you'd consider a homeowner, you'd think would be a typical American homeowner before, who are still rentals. Or renters. One stat that really jumps out is that, you know, in 2006, before the home prices crashed, the number of people that earned a six-figure income that rented was about 12% of renters had a six-figure income. And when you adjust that for inflation and compare it to today, we're at like 19 or 20% of six-figure earners that are renting their homes. And the big rises, you know, that equates to like more than 3 million Americans. And the big rise, you know, you'd think it'd be New York and Washington, D.C. and San Francisco and these high-priced markets. And that's true. There's a lot of high-earning renters in those cities. But the explosion in the numbers we've seen is like really in middle America, places like Cincinnati, Denver, Houston, San Antonio, places like that. And so these investors are really gunning for that market, the high-earning person who can't or doesn't want to buy a house.
And then sticking with geography, where is this happening? Close to city centers, suburbs, a mix of both?
It's mostly, you know, it's a lot of the Sun Belt, you know, the sort of sprawling, the Phoenix and Houstons of the world where you can sort of build out to the horizon. Mm-hmm. And you have these booming cities. That's where a lot of the big investors go because they want to put a lot of money to work. You know, they think in hundreds of millions and billions. You know, they're not doing a few houses here and there. Now, in Wisconsin and other place markets around the Great Lakes, the real big boom is among smaller investors. And they're not necessarily building a lot of houses for rent. They may be doing one-offs. But the big play in those markets is to buy old houses, often in the cities, fix them up, and then flip them to somebody who will own them as a rental home. Cleveland, Ohio, South Bend, Indiana, Pittsburgh. These are some of the most profitable places that have been, at least in recent years, to buy an old house, you know, buy that 100-year-old house, fix it up and turn it into a rental for some, you know, recent graduate to move in and live in the city. That's sort of the big play that we're seeing around the Great Lakes.
Talking to Ryan Diesember, reporter for the Wall Street Journal, looking at the rise of the rental housing market, single family homes being bought for rental purposes or being built for rental purposes. Now, Ryan, part of what's driving this is, okay, if I'm that home buyer, there's nothing I can afford. Maybe there's limited stock of houses for sale. Well, now hold on. If these renting companies are buying up the housing stock, the new houses being built are being built to rent, if I want to buy a house, the market's getting cleared out even more. It's going to get me even harder for me to find that house. Is there something to that?
Yeah, you know, in recent years, especially like, say, between the pandemic and, you know, the worst of the housing crash. So, you know, out of the depths of the housing crash, say 2014 until, you know, maybe last year, that was sort of the play. You know, a house hits the open market. The Wall Street rental firms, the big firms, they have, you know, very sophisticated computers, networks of brokers and house hunters. These computers will, you know, they'll ping on a house the moment it hits the MLS, if it the listing service, if it checks all their boxes of, you know, the market they want to be in, the type of house they want. They love newer houses. They want to be in like the best school districts. They don't want a too big of a house. They don't want too big of a property. They like that sort of cookie cutter house because they know what to expect when they buy it. They know what to expect when their repairs pop up, and they're very sort of homogenous. Now, there was a lot of competition for homes. The Wall Street firms will usually win when they're up against, a first-time home buyer. And the reason isn't that they're willing to offer more money. They usually offer the same amount, but they can pay cash. They don't fuss over the carpet or the paint like you and I would. There's no emotion attached, you know. They write an offer and they'll pay all cash tomorrow or next month if you want. So for a seller, they're like sort of the perfect buyer. So they'll end up winning a lot of those. Now, where they started to build houses is because, you know, you can only accumulate so many houses that way. You know, it takes a lot of time. You're buying them one at a time and individual transactions. We all know how difficult it is to buy a house, even if you're just writing a check for it. So, you know, building houses and whole subdivisions of houses allows them to really scale up. And the reason they're doing that now more than ever is because the pandemic has really put a shine on spacious suburban living, right? A lot of people who are, you know, living in a city and they say, you know, well, we were going to move out to the suburbs and buy a house and start a family, or our kids would be school age. So we were going to buy in a few years. But now, you know, the city's not looking so great right now. It's not the same sort of place to live. It might take some time to recover. Interest rates are at an all-time low. Let's go house hunting. So that's why we're seeing this sort of move into the suburbs. And of course, you know, some people are finding they can't afford it. But hey, look, here's a brand new house. We can be the first to move in. We're just going to be renting. We're going to be paying some investors' mortgage rather than our own.
Now, the thought for at least middle-class America for decades now has been that equity in the house is how you store up wealth to maybe send your kid to college. Obviously, the Great Recession, as you were saying earlier, shook that up for people. But is there a concern that if home buying is less of an option, if home renting is more and more the way of the future, are we losing something here?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Americans, you know, at least in the last like half century or so, since World War II, say, have not been great savers. And they have largely... the middle class has kept pace and holding on to their share of like sort of the pie, the overall American wealth, not because they're earning any more money than they would have adjusted for inflation. It's about the same, but their homes have risen in value. And that's where most middle-class families earn their wealth and, you know, pay for, you know, you get the starter home, you sell it, you get a bigger home, then you downsize and you take the equity out, and that sort of funds your retirement. That system is threatened by this because, one, you don't have people sort of getting on that escalator of earning equity and sort of stashing away, sort of saving by accident with every monthly mortgage check. You have that problem. And on the other end, you have people at the top of that ladder or that escalator who have the big house and are waiting for sort of the next generation to come and buy them out at a price that they're hoping will be much more than they paid to fund their, you know, retirement or, you know, medical care, whatever they need at the end of their lives. And they might not be able to do that because they didn't get on that escalator to earn the money to get up to that. So it really does call into question and maybe threaten that sort of home as a piggy bank system that we've set up in America for the middle class.
Ryan, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks for having me.
Ryan Dezember is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He joined us to look at a boom in the rental single-family housing market.